The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Hi, I'm Alexis Ohanian. You may know me as one of the co-founders of Reddit, but more recently, a large part of my identity is being a father to my wonderful daughters. In my podcast, Business Dad, I hope to open the conversation about working parents a bit. You'll get to hear from a wide range of business dads, from Rainn Wilson and Guy Raz to Todd Carmichael and Shane Battier, to find out how they balance being a dad with a successful career. Business Dad is available now, so be sure to listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Gamefly, the best way to rent or buy your favorite games. Head to gamefly.com/farbeyond for a free premium 30-day trial today.
Do not underestimate the power of PlayStation.
Beyond.
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 That's right. That's the name of the show. It's Beyond. Welcome to Beyond, episode 528. My name is Max Scoville, and I'm joined today by Brian Altano.
Are you reading that off the paper? You don't need
to. No, I'm just rustling the paper. Thanks for pointing out one of my many insecurities, Andrew Goldfarb.
Hey, Max. Nice to meet you. Nice to meet you. I'm Andrew. I said nice wrong, and ruined my own bad joke.
We belong on this show together. And Casey DeFritas.
Hey, guys. What's up?
Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
We are going to be talking about Monster Hunter a little bit, which you have been playing a bit.
Yeah.
That was one of the many huge games that's coming out this week, but there's a bunch of other stuff I want to touch on first. First things first, I want to point out that you have a Pokemon shirt and Andrew has a Super Mario Kart shirt. Brian does not have a Nintendo shirt on. But
there's a cat in front of me.
There is a cat in front of you that's sort of like a Nintendo icon. But so something popped up this week that is sort of crazy. They're making these things that are basically PlayStation Amiibo. They're called Totaku.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't do anything.
No.
They don't.
They
don't have any functionality or anything, and they're like pretty arbitrary characters, with the exception of like Kratos is obviously a game that got back out of war games coming out soon. The rest of them are just kind of a mix of legacy stuff and more modern stuff.
So like, let's just run through them really quick. We got Kratos from the new God of War with his beard, Crash Bandicoot, Sackboy, Heihachi from Tekken. He's the one with the funny hair, one of the many. Parappa the Rapper, Hunter from Bloodborne, and the Fizar FX-350, which is the Wipeout car spaceship thing.
Yep.
They don't have NFC. They don't have any of the chips in them that make the Amiibo do their magic thing. But they're pretty obviously like, hey, it's PlayStation Amiibo, basically.
Small collector. I mean, they're $10 too.
Yeah.
So
they're $10. They are GameStop exclusive in the U.S. You can get them on. I guess they're made by ThinkGeek, which is owned by GameStop. How do you guys feel about these?
I love them.
I think they're really cool just to have on your desk. Like, I think there isn't, especially something like Bloodborne and even Dark Souls. Like, there haven't been a lot of merchandise for those other than like a really expensive Figma that's coming out. So in that way, it's nice. I'm weirded out that they wouldn't do like Nathan Drake. They wouldn't do, you know, Ellie with the tattoo from The Last of Us Part Two. Like,
I think they'll get there.
Hopefully, because I want to see them do more. I think Nintendo has been really good with Amiibo about using them to almost promote what's next and tying into stuff.
I mean, well, that's also because they do have like the chips do things, you know, like they'll use this to unlock this. And it's kind of, I mean, that makes sense, you know, from that collector standpoint. They're like, get the new Chibi Robo game and it comes with a Chibi Robo Amiibo. And in that sense, it makes sense. But these aren't actually like tied to any particular games. I mean, aside from any new games. So I think it makes sense that they're doing a little bit greatest hits and a little bit kind of older stuff. I would be very surprised if we didn't get a Nathan Drake. It gets tricky. You mentioned that you wanted a Spider-Man. I don't know how to tell you this. There are a lot of Spider-Man toys out there already.
Not that one. Not that cool new Insomniac suit.
Yeah. We'll probably get a Marvel
Checkmate.
Legends of that. But I mean, it gets complicated when it's any kind of third-party stuff. I'm sort of surprised that Crash Bandicoot is in here, though he is like the original, you know, PlayStation mascot. He is owned by Activision, I guess. But No, it's cool that we're getting some little trinkets to play with.
Yeah, I pre-ordered the Bloodborne one immediately, and I'm going to get the Figma too because it's nice, but that's going to be like a $90 to $100 figure.
Yeah.
I think in terms of like sort of small scale stuff that you can get, you know, on the way at a GameStop that isn't a Funko Pop, you know, that kind of has its own look to it. Mm-hmm. I think that's perfectly awesome for PlayStation fans to grab something that's $10, $11 on the way out of the store.
The Bloodborne one is a standout to me too. Like that's the one I want.
It's also like it looks cool. It's like the pose from the title screen, basically, which is awesome. Or if you just turn him around and look at his back all day, you know.
Right? Okay, so
I definitely want to see them in person and see what the quality is like, because some of these, I mean, they're modeled after such detailed characters.
Yeah.
Like a lot of the Nintendo characters are just, they're like, you know, like the Palico there, they're just very non-detailed, and but these guys are much more realistic.
Well, the cool thing about these
but
is
still
that
$10.
They were not sort of designed, they didn't sort of write themselves into a corner the way Amiibo did. If you look at the first line of Amiibo, they're all based on Smash Brothers character poses, which were ostensibly not created to be figures.
Yeah.
So what you end up having is a bunch of characters who have like Diddy Kong who's sitting on like ice. Or like Link, who's got that weird pee stick going down the side. And the only one of these that you see something like sort of clear sticking out is the Fizar FX350 ship from Wipeout. And that's because that's like a floating, hovering craft. So, yeah, they're really well designed so far in that they don't have like rods of clear ice going.
You're right. They're totally right about that.
Yeah.
Do you think they'll sell out? Like,
I think some will.
No?
I don't think they will ever sell out. I think they're really cool. I think part of it with Amiibo is like there's whole like speedrunning categories for Zelda around having this Amiibo because the functionality. Like these are just really, I genuinely think these are cool, cheap collectibles, and it kind of introduces a really nice new like low tier end to buy. But I don't think they'll sell.
I think you completely underestimate the approach that gamers take to collecting.
Yeah,
maybe
it's kind of scary. And you saw this with Amiibo where they're like, I found a Samus with two left arms. It's $160,000 on eBay.
There's like Amiibo that people were importing. Were importing from Japan.
Well, the Monster Hunter Stories Amiibo.
Yeah, totally. And so you look at stuff like. Even like Jigglypuff or like Rosalina, characters who aren't like fan favorites, but like people, you know, kind of like them. They were hunting those down. They were camping outside of Target. Yo, you got that Rosalina? Like people go crazy for little figurines like this. I'm a little bummed that they don't have any specific functionality with PlayStation. But then again, Toys to Life stuff outside of Amiibo has all failed.
Yep.
So. And figurines have been going strong since, I don't know, the dawn of man.
Yeah,
I'm surprised they don't include like, I don't know, a code for a free avatar theme.
Yeah,
that seems that like the easiest way to. Yeah. Like, hey, here's an avatar buddy icon, whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
I think what's odd about them is that they're not totally uniform in like their packaging, like the colors are all over the place, but also the figures themselves. Like, if you look at the way the like Mr. Game & Watch figure looks, how he's like a flat toy, and then you look at Parappa's like
he's
three
like
times
this
thick. It's just weird, so
it's kind of odd.
Kind of cool.
I'm kind of reserve my judgment until I actually see these in person, because they could completely come out and just be like the worst, sloppiest paint ops and like just like flash all over the plastic and stuff. But I am amazed that Nintendo's managed to make such like high-end Amiibo at this point. Like, they look great. I'm glad they're still around. I hope that PlayStation does more of this stuff too. And maybe get some, I don't know, maybe get some third party stuff. It'd be so cool to have like a little figurine of like Metal Gear Solid 1 Snake with like the low poly.
Oh God. Yeah.
I think that'd be awesome. I want them. I hope these do well because I want more of them. I think, it's the beginning of a cool line. I love that they're like, right. Keeping it under $10 is like that really easy.
What would you
cute gifts?
Yeah,
exactly.
See one on the way. I was like, oh, that's my friend's favorite character.
Yeah.
What would you guys want that isn't on this list? Casey, go.
A Monster Hunter Hunter, but
that's not fair because they already have like Gashapon here, and they have Amiibo. Yeah. And I broke your toy.
No, it's okay.
Andrew, what would you want besides Persona?
Oh, dang. I think
Aloy.
I really would like a nice Nathan Drake. I think that there's been like really tall ones and really cute little chibi ones, but I would like just like a cute little Amiibo size one.
Yeah,
in case
or a Sully.
Aloy, that's a good one too.
Yeah, Aloy would be great. Oh yeah, why? I'm very
one of the
really
Watchers.
Surprised they make Aloy. Yeah.
Oh yeah, the Watch, that would be fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Man, that's such a good idea.
Yeah.
I want some of the monsters from Bloodborne. I'm replaying that game now, and it's just like the boss designs are just stunning, and they like I think with those you'd have to have a bunch of like weird ice and pee rods and stuff like that, because like,
I mean,
they're just so all over the place.
If Bloodborne had come out in like 2000 through 2000. 2003, we would 100% have a line of McFarlane toys of like yes. god awful things
of like
out
the
of that
orphan
game.
Cost with like all hey, the little things around.
It's that yeah. pig with a prolapsed anus that vomits poison at you. Great. Anyway, on the world's worst segue, there's some rumors about Kingdom Hearts 3. None of us here are Kingdom Hearts 3 experts, so please don't yell at us. We're just going to go through this really quick. But rumors that we're going to see Monsters, Inc. in there.
Yeah, there's like actually photos of that world, and so they look. They could be. I mean, they're probably Photoshop, but
it
maybe
could
they're
be
real
VR chat screenshots. I don't.
It would be. Yeah, seriously. There is also already a Pixar world confirmed. Like we know we're getting Toy Story, and then the other one from Disney Animation. We know we're getting Tangled and Big Hero 6. So it's like another Pixar world makes them really heavy on like modern 3D animated franchises, but mm-hmm. maybe.
And then there's Shibuya from The World Ends With You. Is that
yeah.
what that is?
Yeah. So, which would be cool.
Yeah. And Neku was already in Dream Drop Distance.
Right.
So the main character from that game was already in a Kingdom Hearts game.
Oh, cool.
So we haven't yeah. had, I don't think
the world
a full world. And that would be awesome if we had a modern representation of Tokyo mm-hmm. in Kingdom Hearts.
Yeah, like in HD. And
yeah.
looking. Yeah,
that would
be really
so
cool.
awesome. And yeah.
Yeah,
then, excited for The World Ends With You.
D23 Japan.
So the rumor is that this is all coming, that this news is coming in Q1.
Okay, I was going to say, one, they have a D23 in Japan, and two, that's going to be a playable level of this
yeah.
game.
So that's sometime in mid to late February, and right. so I think that is just the next event people think could be where we'll get more news.
That makes sense.
I feel like release date, so there's a rumor that it's a release date towards the end of this year. If they're really going to come out in 2018, which I'm still skeptical on, that timing kind of works, but I feel like E3 or TGS is a way more likely Kingdom Hearts drop point. Although if it is coming out in September, then obviously it needs to be way before TGS. So we'll see.
And then they're also saying maybe Frozen at E3, which makes sense.
Makes a lot. That's Frozen is second only to Star Wars, right? It's that's the biggest.
That is their money printing machine. That's not even like a machine. That's like a gun that shoots money into their own faces. It's weird. And then Noctis and Lightning, which. Yeah, that makes sense. You mm-hmm. know, those are the kind of biggest, most iconic Final Fantasy characters of the last few generations.
Yeah, in the same way that we got, Final Fantasy VII characters back in the day. Like now, those are the only recent, those are the only recent gen new Final Fantasy protagonists.
Right, right.
Yeah, and then they're again saying September release date, which I mean, I feel like this game has been kind of under wraps for long enough. I mean, I don't remember when this was announced.
100 million years ago.
Yeah. I don't.
As dinosaurs roamed the earth.
Yeah. I remember watching a trailer when I was in high school. Just
God.
Like,
God, yeah.
So.
It's been a very long time. And there have been so many spinoffs, and they're up to the collections were from 1.5 to 2.5 to 2.8. like they're inching their way towards 3.
That's going to be nuts.
But some of those aren't actually in between 2 and 3.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Those are essentially just recatching you up so you can be ready. Yeah.
Yeah.
This episode is brought to you by Gamefly, the best way to rent or buy your favorite games. It has gotten increasingly difficult to try games before you buy them, but Gamefly lets you take your pick from a library of over 9,000 titles, including the biggest new releases like Assassin's Creed Origins, Call of Duty World War II, NBA 2K18, Madden 18, and many, many more. Gamefly will ship these games to you, and you can keep them as long as you want. There are no late fees or due dates, and shipping is always free. This breaks down to as little as 54 cents a day, which is a lot cheaper than dropping $60 on a brand new game that you can't stand playing. Plus, you don't even have to leave the house. Oh, and they rent movies, too. Normally, a Gamefly trial only lets you check out one game at a time, but if you head to gamefly.com/farbeyond, you can sign up for a free premium 30-day trial that lets you check out two games or movies at a time. Try it out today, again, at gamefly.com/farbeyond.
Weird piece of news. They announced that they're doing some PlayStation Nikes. These are the PG2s. It's a Paul George collaboration. He's a basketball player who has already done, he's already done one collaboration with Nike. And I don't think that was console exclusive at all. But these are, PlayStation themed. They've got kind of, purplish hues. They have light-up tongues, some sweet LA lights. And these are coming out on February 10th. Limited edition, of course, and they're $110, which is...
I did not catch the power button on the inside of the tongue. That's a nice touch.
Yeah. They're pretty cool. I mean, none of us are particularly sneakerheads, Brian. You kind of are, but it's...
Yeah.
You stick mostly to kind of dunks and retro stuff.
I wear a lot of Jordans.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't really wear a lot of these are actually for playing basketball shoes. But these are cool. They're not really for me. I think they're,
you've got a Zoom Air bag.
Yeah. If you're highly athletic or you're a kid, I think these would be great. I think they're a little over the top otherwise, but, they're kind of cool. They have that 80s movie theater carpeting look to the side of them.
Yeah.
Oh,
I love the like the around the laces that is like the PlayStation colors, and like on the sides they have like the actual like button logos and stuff. Like, they have like really cool.
I think they
features.
Look cool. They don't. They don't look too gaudy or too in your face. Like this is PlayStation. I think they just look sure. neat.
I kind of love that we're at a point where there is enough like sort of you know nerd culture. Like we got those Vans that look like retro, like classic Nintendos. Yeah. I went on like the Vans website and was you can customize your own like high tops on there, and I was trying to make it so it looked like. Like a Super Nintendo, like different shades of purple. And you can't quite get it right with the number of grays. Mm-hmm. But I would love it if we got some like high tops that look like an original PlayStation 1. Just right. Because like, that's like, those are colors that don't look too offensive as a shoe.
Yeah, I hope these sell really well and they do more collaborations with Nike. Because I love PlayStation. I love Nike. These are just not really for me.
Yeah.
But I hope they do more like street shoes.
I think they look really cool. I just probably wouldn't wear them.
Yeah, totally.
I think Nike owns Converse.
Yeah.
I'd love to see some Converse.
Oh my God.
Yeah, that's true.
They should do some like hyper realistic versions of Crash Bandicoot sneakers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Either way, like
covered in smashed tangerines or whatever.
This kind of goes well with our first story in terms of like I really like that they're opening up their branding and that they're making more cool stuff, more merchandise for PlayStation fans. Because for the longest time we didn't really have a whole lot of stuff to work with.
Yeah, and that's why I like that range too. Like Tataku is $10. These are over $100.
Yeah, these are $110.
So they're making it kind of for everybody to, you know, there's the impulse purchases, there's the collector purchases. Mm-hmm. I really like that.
These will also either sell out in 5 seconds or you'll be able to buy 20 pairs a day for the rest of your life. It could go either way.
I feel like it'll be the first.
You think so?
It'll be limited, I mean, it's that weird thing of look at what Nintendo's done with like Uniqlo and all that stuff. Like those are a little more, and even like the shirts from the Urban Outfitters thing, like they have these partnerships that are sort of a little more like low, you know, like they're just available and you can walk into any store and buy them. I feel like when you aim for like collector stuff, that's like a whole different audience.
Totally.
And that's totally that gaming audience you were talking about.
I feel so bad for sneakerheads too, because like they have like, it's one thing to be like, oh, there's a limited number of this thing. And then you get into like, oh, but my feet are this size. And it's like, oh, so it's a fraction of that limited number that's going to fit you in general.
Yeah.
That clothes really collecting. Sucks if you have a common foot size.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's not fair. You, inherently going after peg warmers or short cases, whatever. Anyway, so Resident Evil 2 20th anniversary is coming up. I figure we could talk about this. There was a tweet that Kamiya put out about the remake. He said, I heard that my friend is directing Resident Evil 2 remake. Let's trust him and wait for new information, winky face. And when asked for further comment, he said, blocked. And then, you know, no, not really. But that's, I love that dude on Twitter. He's great. But yeah, remake was announced in 2015, which was a while ago.
A long time ago.
20th anniversary makes sense. What do you guys make of this game?
I love Resident Evil 2. I mean, it's one of my favorite games of all time. I mean, the Resident Evil remake that came out for Nintendo GameCube and then later to everything else was for the very longest time one of my favorite remakes of any video game ever.
I mean, there are people who call it the best Resident Evil game ever.
Yes. Yeah, hands down. I think it was like it was the last true sort of attempt to totally nail that survival horror style. And that's sort of cheating because it's based on the original Foundation, which is one of the first truly definitive survival horror games. But it added a whole bunch of new stuff. And this game has never really truly gotten that treatment. And we heard about this in 2015. This is a game that when it first came out was revolutionary. And looking at it now, it's actually sort of comical. But I still think there's a lot of creepy, scary stuff about this thing that makes it really stand out in the sort of sea of survival horror that came since. It's a kind of over-the-top game, right? It's about, like, Raccoon City. It sort of moves the needle outside of just the original Trevor Mansion that the games took place in and shows you the police station and the streets, and you go into the gun shop and, like, old diners and stuff like that. And it totally expands the scale of what this universe is all about.
Like the Arkham City to the Arkham Asylum that is the first
one. And it's like the cool thing about this game is that the core environment of that police station is really fun and really interesting to navigate, even though it doesn't make any sense for cops to have to use like a lion's eye door to get into the jail in the basement. It's a little ridiculous. But yeah, I'm hoping that something comes from this. All the Resident Evil social media accounts recently have changed their logos to the original Resident Evil font. And I don't know what this means. I don't know if we're going to get Resident Evil 2 in the Resident Evil 7 engine, if we're going to get a straight up remake like we did with the original remake.
They said so they announced this, it was like, I forget if it was at Gamescom, but it was sometime like in late summer a few years ago. And in interviews since then, like they talked about it was a full remake, not just up-res. Like they talked about re-recording all the dialogue. Like they've gone over several times that they're going to do something significant with it, probably more along the lines of actually like our remake.
Right.
But like, I don't know where it is, because it's definitely been a couple of years. Like, this to me feels like something they could out of the blue one day announce, or they hold it for E3. Like, it feels like it could totally go either way.
Yeah. The Resident Evil 7 announcement happened at E3 last. Was it last year? Were they?
No, it was 2 years ago.
I think it was last year.
No, because it came out last year in January. So it was
right. That's what I'm talking about. Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm all screwed up. But I remember, like, we had known about that kitchen demo for a long time, and then we saw the new trailer for Resident Evil and didn't know it was Resident Evil until it said Resident Evil, which was really smart. And I don't know if that's the route they'll go this time around. But this is just a very cherished game that hasn't really held up well. And that's the thing about like old video games is that it's hard to go back to some of them.
I mean, we talk a lot about this on the show, but like there's that thing where in games, number two is frequently better than the first one. Like unlike movies where that's not usually
Zelda.
The case. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Nintendo's weird because it's like, oh, well, the second Mario is like a fake Mario second Zelda is like a total departure.
Castlevania 2 is weird. Yeah. Contra 2 is weird.
But I would say with more recent games, like the kind of the second iteration frequently like
Watch
improves
Dogs,
on the
Assassin's
first.
Creed. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Uncharted. But in this case, like Resident Evil 2, I remember when that
Elf
came
bowling.
Out. And you had to go and like, God damn it. Resident Evil, they put out like Resident Evil, and then there was like the director's cut, which I forget was even different there. But like, I remember those like very early days of PlayStation where like the games first came in like those big like letterbox shaped cases with the cardboard thing and the plastic.
Yeah, there was something. First of all, the box arts for those games were pretty like spooky looking, but there was something sort of like grimy about all the packaging and design that sort of felt like your friend had come back from like a weird punk rock store that sold Japanese horror videotapes.
Yeah,
and, like,
but then
like,
I mean,
oh, okay,
by the time
the
RE2 rolled around, that was kind of hitting the stride of that first generation. And I remember like that was one of the first ones where you're like, oh, they could be on more than one disc. Like that's nuts. And I remember really liking the first one just because it was like it. The sense of place that it had was really cool. And there's that like initial sort of car accident, and you're like, there's like a burning truck, and you're like, there's zombies coming at you. And it did that thing that games, I feel like, were much better at doing back in the day of just sort of throwing you in and like being like, swim, go on.
Fun.
Yep.
Sink, swim, whatever. I don't care. You bought me. I'm here in your house. You got to beat me.
I went back about 2 months ago. I was on sort of a survival horror kick after The Evil Within 2. And I tried to replay Remake on PS4. And it's one of those things where I kind of wish I hadn't, because it doesn't look as good as I remember it back in the old GameCube era. But it's also like the tank controls
were so bad.
It was there are people that love them. I played that game probably start to finish 20 times. Like I was able to do it in under, I think it's like if you do it in under 3 hours, you get the infinite rocket launcher and all that. I beat that game like top to bottom in every way you possibly could. And I just couldn't go back last year. It was just too much. So I'm hoping that this goes in the direction of Resident Evil 7, where it's either like first or third person and you can explore this entire city like that.
I mean, you nailed it. It would be really cool if it was in that engine. It's a really weird time for stuff like this because like we're what, 3 weeks away from Shadow of the Colossus also. And that's another game that like I am so like I have such fond memories of playing that game. But I worry that the camera stuff, the control stuff, like they I hope it made like a major difference with it and have kind of rethought stuff and made it a little more modern, because if they try and stick to exactly what it was, I worry that it's actually kind of not accessible now.
We've talked about that like on the show a bunch of times, the sort of concept of like George Lucasing something and taking something sacred and bringing it up to speed for modern audiences and then losing something along the way. And I worry about that because there are old school, and that's the weird thing, right? Resident Evil specifically is such a like fascinatingly fractured fan base. Sorry for the alliteration there. In that,
dream
like,
drop Dristance.
In that, some people are there for the old school sort of tank controls, and others came in for Resident Evil 4, and others after that, 5 and 6, and now 7, which is a first person like survival horror slash VR game.
Yeah, if that was your first Resident Evil and you went back to play Resident
Evil,
if you've only played Resident Evil 7 and then RE2 Remake comes out and you play that, and you're going to be like, oh, this is very different.
It's very different than like movies. Like if your first Star Wars movie was The Force Awakens, and then you went back and watch like Empire Strikes Back, you'd be like, oh, there's a lot here that I love. I understand like the thread here.
Yeah.
With video games, it's
so
different.
That's so key, because with movies, it's a movie is a movie. And I mean, it might be, you know, weird differences in sound or special effects, but the actual like functional thing of sitting down and looking at it and paying attention, understanding what happens, that's fine. That doesn't change. But with games, there's a technical level where, like, I mean, you go back and you play, like, it's weird to think about it, but the standard thing of twin stick first person shooter controls wasn't standard for a really long time. Like, you try to sit down and play something like GoldenEye or Perfect Dark, and you're like, what what are these buttons doing? Like, what?
I mean, even Resident Evil 4, which is a third person survival horror action game, a la, you know, Gears of War and the games that came after it. Even that doesn't control like a dual stick game. When people play that for the first time, they forget that you can't walk and shoot at the same time in that game. Right. It's like stop and shot or pop and whatever that is.
I mean,
it's
a
stupid name for it.
We'll get to
stop
this in
and
the
shot, pop and shot.
We'll get to this in a second with the next thing. But I think it's interesting that that can go in the other way. Like, I think there are games that have been sort of inaccessible that can be opened up with sequels too, and I guess that's Resident Evil 7 also actually.
But I like that because games are such an iterative medium, and I don't think there's much wrong with doing a remake of something. I'm excited about Shadow of the Colossus because I missed the boat on that the first time around, and I mean playing the HD version felt like kind of just, I don't know, it felt like kind of late to the party, and
it's so weird because when that version came out, I was like, wow, this is gorgeous, and that wasn't that longer. That was like 10 years ago, less than that.
Yeah. And then we played the remake at PSX, and it's
stunning. Yeah.
Were you into that game, Casey?
I love Shadow.
Oh, awesome!
It was one of my favorite games. I was so excited when they announced this, even though if I've already bought it twice and played through it twice.
Yep.
I'm totally down to play that game again.
Yeah,
I think it's a masterpiece.
I agree. Good.
Yeah, I absolutely agree.
That's another one where I'm interested to see how modern audiences interact with that game, because it is such a just a completely empty open world. It is I've always called it like a sandbox with no sand. Like there's nothing in that world but the colossi or colossuses. And you just go and hunt them down and then you kill them and that's it. There's no, like, there's some lizards and there's like a bird here and there. But other than that, like, there isn't really a ton of stuff to do, or there aren't townsfolk to interact with. Like, especially coming off of something like Horizon, Breath of the Wild, where you can like light
there's
the environment
so much
on
to
fire.
Do.
Yeah.
Well, they never went out and they weren't like, oh, it's a living, breathing world. They were just kind of like, what is this?
This is a forbidden land.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
They're like, that. Grab the man's back hair and stab him in the neck.
That's why I'm so excited to see what people think of it, because it's fascinating playing it now, like in a, you know, after like Horizon, after all these open world games. Like, I still like we played a demo of it. Like, I like the waypoint system, like shining light towards something, basically, and like figuring out where you need to go is like, that's really cool. And that's genuinely innovative. But then you put that up against that feeling of like, oh, I'm so isolated.
Well, that's why it's so difficult when we put together our lists of like the best games of all time. We're like the 10 best PlayStation games of all time. Like, are you counting the criteria of the impact that game had when it launched, or how playable it is in 2018? Yeah. Like, you take away any remake of Resident Evil 2. Resident Evil 2 is absolutely like one of the best PlayStation games of all time. Would I tell you to play it in 2018? Probably not.
Yeah. I still tell people to play Shadow of the Colossus now.
Right,
it's
right.
One of those games where I was like, I want you to play this game. If you've never played it, I want to see how good you are at it.
And that's why I'm excited for this, because I hope it can, to kind of both of your points, I hope it can maintain the magic, but also feel more accessible for someone now.
I'll say, from what we saw at PSX, it has the best hair I've ever seen in the video game.
I was watching some of the footage, and the fur. Yes. It's amazing. It's crazy what they can do with fur on the PS4.
Mm-hmm. Also the cloth, like Wander's little like cape or whatever the heck it is, like flowing in the wind behind him is so cool looking.
Yeah, and like the skyboxes, I love them because they look like real life disappointing skies. Like, I feel like most of the time when you're like, wow, there's a beautiful skybox in that game, either it's like a terrifying thunderstorm because the wizards are at it again, or it's like an amazing sunset and you're like, wow, it's great. But it never is. It's just like, just sort of like weird half overcast.
Yeah.
They get that thing of where it's like a summer day where it's overcast and you're like, oh, like the sun's there, I can see it, but it's not really doing much.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm dying to jump into that game.
But
when the game first came out, I remember being impressed that there were no loading screens.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
back on the PS2, no loading screens, that whole open world. It really helped with the immersion.
That's because there's nothing in the world. That's the secret. That is the secret to open world games. Just don't put anything in it.
But the lizards.
Yeah, except for the lizards. Those take up a lot of RAM. But yeah, for Resident Evil 2, I feel like this is ramping up for something that's going to happen soon.
Yeah.
I don't think we'll have to wait until E3. I think it would be really mean of them to change all their social media icons and then just be like, see you in June.
I totally agree. Unless it's like out at E3.
Yeah. Yeah.
Also, cool. It's Capcom, not Square Enix. So if they announce something, it's probably going to come out, you know, sooner rather than, you know.
Yes.
Well, other than Deep
after
Down.
After you finished your PhD.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I remember Deep Down. I was excited for that.
Yeah. What and happened? Like, we saw it at TGS and I don't know what happened.
Do you remember the Capcom 5?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. That's right.
Yeah. I feel like with Deep Down, Sony was like, hey, we need some stuff for our big PS4 announcement. You got that thing we said you were working on? And they were like, sure, hold on a minute. And they just ran back, what do you have, give us anything, like, we got something about knights riding the subway, please help. All right, anyway, On the subject of Capcom and what they've been up to, and of course, climbing big monsters, Casey, you've been playing Monster Hunter World.
Yes.
Can you say anything about it?
I can say at the preview event I played back in November, the first 10 hours of it, I really, really loved it. I've loved Monster Hunter since 2004.
Wow.
Still love Monster Hunter. I actually brought in my save for my original Monster Hunter game in the disc today for capture. And I have over 300 hours on just one game. Not counting the other games that I've played up until this point.
So holy crap.
I just really like Monster Hunter.
This is one of those series that's been like it kind of does it like much like Resident Evil or you know Metal Gear, it kind of fragments its audience based on mm-hmm. where it goes because it's almost got this kind of like nomadic yeah. thing. Where
I bought a PS3 because I thought the next Monster Hunter was going to be on the PS3 along with The Last Guardian. Little did I know that never happened.
That's one of those stories like you overhear in GameStop. Like it's like a small tragedy. It's like you ended up with a great console.
Yeah.
Word,
oh no, I love my PS3.
Like you got in there day one for a thing that never really came together.
Yep.
Man, yeah.
So what draws you to these games? Because I know that like every time I've tried to get into them, I appreciate the hell out of them, but they're always just like one notch too obtuse for me, where they just get so deep, and that the boss battles get to be like I'm playing Bloodborne right now, and boss battles in that game can be 5-10 minutes long. They can be like 30 in this game.
Yes. So I had a little bit of a unique introduction to Monster Hunter in that I had a very good friend who introduced me to it, and he had already known a lot, and he was taught by people he met online. So I was brought in with people who had already been playing for a bit and could kind of show me the ropes of like the ins and outs of what to do. So my whole experience was a community experience. Like my first time I sat down and played it, I had someone next to me telling me like, oh, like this is the best way to do this. This is where you find the mushrooms. Oh, don't fight that. It's going to kill you. And like helping me along. And the community was amazing. And I always looked forward to come on every night and hunt giant monsters with my friends. It was something I always looked forward to. And that kind of went on to the PSP versions and the 3DS versions as well. I would just sit down and play for hours with my friends. And even though I developed carpal tunnel from the PSP and the claw grip I needed, I still played six hours a day.
Yeah, this comes with being a Monster Hunter. Now, obviously, this is the first time it's on PS4. Period.
Like, yes.
Yeah.
So, it's been on Nintendo systems since the PSP. So Monster Hunter Freedom Unite was the last Sony Monster Hunter, and that was a long time ago.
Well, it was such a huge get for Nintendo to sort of grab that franchise and play keep away for what felt like 10 years almost.
Yeah, there was some weird spinoff on Vita. It wasn't like a main game,
right?
Oh, well, they have some Palico games.
Yeah, maybe that's what it is.
But I don't even know if that those came out here.
But you're totally right that like that thing sold so many PSPs and it was so connected to Sony in my mind, and now it's totally different. Yeah. Now I totally think of it as Nintendo.
Yeah, a lot of people feel the same way.
So I had friends who were buying 3DSs just for this game when it came out, and it clicked, and I was like, oh, and these are people who aren't like regular gamers. They were like you. They'd played a ton of the earlier ones, and like they were like, I want to get back into it with something portable, and it kind of just I kind of skipped the 3DS, so that never really ended up on my radar, and now it's like, oh, hey, here's a huge AAA open world monster hunting game on the console I prefer. So how do I start? How do you get into this kind of thing?
So the new, especially this Monster Hunter, they've been getting slightly better every time. And this Monster Hunter starts you, so there's 14 different weapon types. It starts you off with all 14 in your box. So you can experiment.
So that clears things up right off the bat.
Okay, it does not. Okay, how do you get into this game? First, you go out into the field and you hunt a monster. And then you come back and you look at the stuff that you carved from the monster's body, and you make armor out of that monster to go fight a bigger and stronger and badder monster.
So just go out there, kill anything with one of the 14 weapons, and then come back, use its weird body meat, and then make clothes.
Do you pick the weapon based on which is the coolest, or does it
depends on you.
Okay. What's a good starter, like a starter?
My favorite starter weapon, so I actually started with the greatsword, but it's actually become a lot more technical in Monster Hunter World. They added a lot more moves that make it's more viable to use it in its whole capacity rather than just run up, hit it once, and run away. So now I started trying to use the sword and shield, and I really like it. It's really simple to get into. It's very versatile. You can slice things with your sword, but also bash things with your shield, so you're not limited to a single type of damage. And you can also use items with your weapon out with no other weapon can do, so you're not being punished immediately for not knowing what to do.
Right, right.
And you can start a combo and roll out of it at almost any time.
So it's a lot more forgiving now.
It's incredible. That Sword and Shield has always been a starter weapon. That was the first weapon they ever gave you in Monster Hunter.
Because I think that's what I keep like sort of waiting for. Because I get when I the last game that came out, Jared Petty and I did a Let's Play series where we like learned how to fight, or he taught me how to fight a monster together. And again, like one of our battles was like 45 minutes long. We had to edit the video down, and I lost at the end, but I felt really accomplished because I came close to killing him. But there's so many little microsystems at play of like, my character is tired. Now he's hungry. Now my blade is dull. And now the monster's hungry. I got to feed him while I'm kicking his ass.
Now, does it have like a tutorial? Does it do a good job of actually like holding your hand just a little bit if you're completely being thrown in here?
I thought it did the best job out of all of the Monster Hunters I have played thus far. Some of our coworkers don't feel the same way.
Well, like, not all of them have been playing it, you know, for 10 years.
For weapon mechanics, it still doesn't do a good job.
Really?
It'll show you the tip of the iceberg. It gives you a page in your hunter's notes with combos, but doesn't tell you the best way to use those combos or to use those weapons. So there's a lot of micromanagement that goes along in some of the weapons. For example, the longsword seems really simple on the outset. You press triangle 4 times, that's your combo. Mm-hmm. You press R2 to do a more powerful strike to build up a gauge. I asked one of our freelancers, Brandon Rad, to write up a tutorial on it because that's his favorite weapon, and it's 1,700 words long.
Oh my god!
So it
what?
Yeah, but the thing is, all of the stuff that he mentioned is necessary to know.
Oh my god!
So, but if you want to play at an expert level, you absolutely do not have to play at that level to have fun with this game, and that's one of the reasons why I like it so much. You don't have to be technical, and if anyone is mean to you for it, like,
okay,
don't talk to them.
Yeah, do they have a version of this game that's just like for dumb babies like me, like a Monster
you,
Hunter?
You don't, Breath like I said, you don't have to be that technical with it. Start with the Sword and Shield. You can totally get away with button mashing and rolling out of the way.
Mm-hmm. I really like. I'm generally excited to play this. Like, I say this every time a Monster Hunter game comes out, but like I like everything I hear about this franchise. Like, it's so nerdy and so up my alley. I just haven't. It's never clicked, and I feel like
I was gonna say, this is so you.
Yeah,
that's why I came over to you today, and I was like, are you gonna get Monster Hunter? Because this is you, Andrew.
I really do want to play. I probably can't play it until after launch, but I want to try and get into it, because especially seeing PS4 footage, like,
it's so mixes beautiful.
Like the combat, number one, it looks really good, and the combat almost looks like Dark Souls ish sometimes. Yep. like those big, like, huge weapons too.
There you
like,
go comparing things to Dark
well,
Souls.
Okay, here's the thing. I heard
not in
that,
terms of difficulty
a comment about
yeah
that.
No not like
I that.
That I heard that Dark Souls took inspiration from Monster Hunter.
Oh wow.
As far as like fighting very big monsters with very big weapons.
Yeah, that's
so kind of like the Dark Souls of Monster Hunter.
I'm not even doing the Dark Souls comparison like a difficulty way, but it's even just like Sword and Shield combat isn't something we see, you know, like technically Zelda, but not even close,
right,
really. Like
right.
You can't use it in that sophisticated of a way.
It can be a very punishing system. If you just attack with abandon, most of the weapons will lock you in with a combo, and a monster will be able to get a shot off on you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But if you know the monster, like if you've hunted it 10 times because you want a specific gem to make the specific piece of armor, which will make you better at your weapon, which I did last night until 4 in the morning, you'll know the monster better, and you'll be able to kill it significantly faster than when you first started the hunt. And that accomplishment feels great. The first time you go up to a monster that is giving you trouble and you beat it with your group of three friends is one of the best feelings you can
And that's what I want.
Great.
That's
it
that Bloodborne
great.
Thing.
Yeah.
In that,
yeah. Do you feels
think,
so good.
Do you think this will click with people who, I think that's also like a thing that, that the Souls and Bloodborne games have, is that they are sort of like obtuse and hard to get into, but then you go talk to your friends and they're like, no, you got to do this and that.
Yeah, that's always how it is.
Does this, it's kind of more of the same of that?
Mm-hmm. You'll get in a party and we'll be doing something and someone will ask a question and be like, oh, I know the answer to that.
Now, is it really reliant on multiplayer? I know that's like a huge thing for them, but is it like if you want to just kind of go it solo, can you?
You absolutely can play solo. So you have these guys, your Palicos, and they're little
felines. I thought you meant me.
No, the cat.
No, not me. Oh, no.
And you can customize them to look how you want and name them and give them armor and weapons. And they will come with you and play as a support role.
So you're
honest,
like,
that
you're like
just
you
could
either
me
make
the game.
You could either make friends in real life, or you could bring a cartoon cat to fight the
so
giant
you can
tyrannosaurus.
You can play with one other person, so you can play two players, and then have your two cats with you,
like cat lady.
Yeah,
yeah.
So
it's actually very helpful.
I want you and everyone listening to hold me accountable that I'll be back from DICE on February 23rd. after that, like starting that Monday after, I'm going to start playing Monster Hunter.
All right. Okay. So tweet at Garfep. That's G-A-R-F-E-P. And make sure that he does the thing he said he would do.
At the last week of February, I'm going to play Monster Hunter, I promise.
Yeah, we're going to try to get some copies of this, and I'll sink some time into it. And Casey, I want to get you back on when you can actually talk. And you're reviewing it, right?
So I'm not reviewing
it. Oh, you're not? Okay.
But
you're doing the guide?
Is Joe Scrubbles?
I'm doing the guide. And yeah, Joe Scrubbles is doing it. And I generally agree with him on everything he has to say about Monster Hunter. So I trust him.
Good.
Good.
Yeah.
I
just wanted to say, don't feel too intimidated about getting into this game. You absolutely can do it. It's really fun. It's really rewarding, especially if you have a group of friends to do it. The online system is far and above, so much better than it's ever been.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's a really nice motivational message. Yeah. Right?
Believe in yourself, and they've improved the UI. That's awesome. So there's actually a bunch of big stuff coming out this week. Monster Hunter World is one of the big games. The other one, Dragon Ball FighterZ.
Woo.
Which is reviewing really well.
One woo.
These are two games that have had a bunch of betas that have just coincidentally come out when I have not been anywhere near a console. So that's been cool. Yeah, I mean, it's getting like 8s and 9s across the board.
You're a big Dragon Ball boy.
I am a big Dragon Ball boy. I'm totally behind on Super. I used to be like a Dragon Ball expert, and then they started a new show, and I'm
I stopped after Majin Buu.
Toriyama. Nervous breakdown. Like, and he was like, GT, go nuts, whatever.
Oh, no. It's not canon.
I'm not even a Dragon Ball guy, but I just love looking at this game.
Yeah.
It's so gorgeous.
I agree.
I mean, this feels like there are over 70 Dragon Ball games in existence. They've been making them forever. Mm-hmm. A lot of them are just trash and shovelware. And it's the dumbest thing in the world because, like, this is a show about martial arts and throwing energy blasts and people fighting really quickly. So it should be the biggest no-brainer that you just make a basic functional fighting game.
Yeah.
Yep.
Budokai was my first PS2 game.
Yeah, that was
good.
Oh wow,
it was fun.
That was one of the first that was a huge one when it came out. I remember that was like kind of the peak of my Dragon Ball fandom.
Yeah.
And it was like at that point you had to buy like a mod chip for your PS1 and play like Dragon Ball GT, like, and you had to get like a burned copy from eBay or something and do the thing where you jam a pencil in like the disk drive to get it in there. Like it was not a good time. And then they started being like, oh, hey, we're actually localizing things and releasing them. But at the same time, it was also like, hey, we can make a 3D fighter. And you're like, why? Oh, well, fine. Okay. And I feel like there have been a handful of 2D games since then. But this is the first one where they're like, excuse me, why is there a Batman and Superman fighting game at Evo and not Dragon Ball? Hello. So here we get this. And it's Arc System Works, the guys who did BlazBlue. Good Lord, this game looks awesome.
Yes.
So I'm incredibly excited about getting my hands on this. It looks great. Also, the fact that it's got a story mode that is like adding new stuff. The big thing is they added Android 21, who is a lady who wears like a cool like kind of mod dress and glasses like yours, Casey. And she's a new android, and apparently she's going to do all
she
kinds of
really
moves.
She looks really cool, and I like her, and I want to play her in this game.
I hope they support this, and just we wind up with a gigantic like MVC level roster where it just keeps on going, and there's just random characters in there that you know you don't even know what to do with. You're like, oh, I'm kind of bummed they don't have Mr. Satan in there, Hercule.
Aww.
But yeah, I'm that comes out later this week, so that's another huge big one.
That's his arc. He should totally be in there.
Yeah, right? He just comes out and does like the megaton punch or whatever and then fakes indigestion to get out of doing the rest of the match. That's how you just throw.
It's cheating.
Yeah, it'd be great. There's another game coming out this week called Celeste. Brian, you've been playing this.
Yeah, do you guys know about this game?
Yes.
Okay, Celeste, Goldfarb, I think you're going to love this game too.
I can't wait.
It's a sort of like throwback chunky 16-bit pixel art game about sort of platforming, traversing environments, climbing, and basically reaching the top of this mountain. It's vaguely story-driven in that there's cutscenes and there's characters and stuff like that, more so than, say, something like Meat Boy. But I will say the challenge is on par with some of the toughest stuff that you might have played towards the end of, say, something like Guacamelee. In fact, that's what this game was really evocative to me about. It was sort of the air dashing and wall grabbing and double, triple jumping into, you know, collecting and all that kind of stuff. Bringing all those moves together into this perfect synchronicity to achieve everything here is just so much fun. And it's a really hard game, but it's also one of those games where when you die on that screen, you just start again. So you don't have lives. It's like it's punishing in the moment. Mm-hmm. And then you kind of move on to the next screen and you're good to go. The way I'm playing it right now is I'll go through each stage and just basically try to get to the end and then go back and try to get all the collectibles. And collectibles are weird things. Like there's like little coins. There's also hidden strawberries in every level. Like, yeah, it's just really, really special. And there are so many levels in this game. There's so much to do. And yeah, there, you can get a look at that air dash right there. That's, that sort of vertical or that diagonal dash reminds me of like an old Castlevania game almost.
Well, and it kind of reminds me of so this is Matt Thorson who did Towerfall.
Yeah.
And that's a game where it's obviously way – it's kind of simpler than this. It's a multiplayer game. But it had lots of really cool like ways to avoid people. And in that game, the thing is you're shooting arrows and you have to kind of use the space in a really smart way. I'm so excited for this. This is so up my alley.
It does a really interesting job of shifting in and out of different art styles.
Like, yeah, sure.
Overworld is like a low poly kind of 3D thing. The actual gameplay is like 8-bit, 16-bit. But
God, I would kill for it on Vita.
Yeah, it looks like it'd be great.
It's on Switch if you need it on a portable, but it looks and plays great on PS4 as well.
Yeah, I mean, Towerfall started on Ouya actually, and eventually came to pretty much literally every platform.
Oh,
so
I didn't know that. I thought it was just straight to PlayStation.
It was actually, I believe, it was an Ouya exclusive.
It was, it was announced. Timed exclusive.
So
it
I'm
was
hoping
really good. Ouya.
Direct to
good
crackle.
Job. Yeah,
direct
I didn't know.
I would love though if this came to everything because I really want to play it on Vita.
Yeah, if you're watching the video version, you can see the character just died, but then initially, just you would think that'd be the end of it, but just immediately respawn, get to keep playing. That's the forgiving side of it that I think works really well in the fact that it is so hard, right? And it does push back a little bit, but it's worth getting through. And like I said, I've been playing it in a way that I don't really go for. Oh, there's also like secret exits and stuff like that. So there's just hidden stuff all over the place.
Cool.
Please check this game out. I don't really get to talk about indies enough on PS4, mostly because there's so many great AAA games all the time. But I want to get better at that this year. And this is a great game.
Hey, Brian, I want to let you keep going, but you got to shut up. We're talking about another AAA game that's coming out this week.
Sweet.
This is The Impatient, the supermassive game. The guys who did Until Dawn and
I don't know if
Until
that's
Dawn,
a AAA game, Max.
Rush of Blood.
it's like a AA game.
That's what I was. There's no middle ground. It doesn't have pixel art, that's for sure. This is the PlayStation VR sort of prequel to Until Dawn, where you're of course the inpatient. You're a person in a mental institution, and it's spooky. There's all sorts of spooky stuff going on here. I don't know if I want to play this, just because I'm like, I don't really like to put a thing on my head and then be frightened by it. Like that's not really my jam. But I do really want to give a shout out to the controls in this. I think I've talked about this before. I played it at PSX, and like we're talking a bit about how like games you forget, like GoldenEye or Resident Evil 2, it's like you remember it being really good, but the controls don't hold up. And you're like, oh, the means of actually playing this are really difficult. This is one of the most intuitive like PlayStation Move VR games I've played. I think you can play with a controller too, but just the means of like interacting with things around you and it being sort of it uses the microphone to like you can talk and answer questions with that, and it's just sort of,
it's really interesting because in terms of these guys making VR games that are sort of in that Until Dawn universe, Rush of Blood, which was a PSVR launch title, was one that I got like kind of a lot of mileage out of, and it was the first PSVR game or VR game period to give me that feeling of like that pit in your stomach you get when you're on a roller coaster, and I was just sitting on my couch and I'm like, how are they doing this like psychologically? But that was sort of like a lo-fi wonky carnival game about going on like haunted rides and shooting clowns in the face, and it's like it felt low budget and it worked, I think, to that degree, in that you're on a roller coaster that constantly keeps breaking and bad things keep happening. But this feels so much more polished and so much more cinematic. And I think what people sort of expect from Until Dawn.
It's also easy to look at it and be like, oh, Until Dawn's a scary slasher horror movie game and Rush of Blood is like a more carnival ride thing. But this is totally going more like psychological horror way to it. It feels, it's got like almost like kind of Vision Quest-y like dream sequence stuff, as opposed to like just there's a zombie or a killer or whatever. Mm. It's like very... I don't know. It seems more environmental horror is what they were stressing, but still not really wild on VR horror, you know?
Specifically the you woke up in a mental institution VR horror.
Yeah.
Like I feel like every couple of months we do one of those videos here at IGN of like how scary it is, and I always keep getting funneled into these rooms where they like put a dark helmet on me and all of a sudden I wake up in a mental asylum. I'm like, again? Doing this again? But I have a feeling these guys will have a great take on it.
What about one where you have to go see your accountant? But he keeps eating all of your receipts for your like write-off.
That's scary.
He's like, oh, nom, nom, nom. You're like, no, please don't. But then you look down and you've got your hands are made of old sponges and you get all your taxes wet.
Okay.
That's an adult horror game. Right
yeah.
What?
Rated M for mature.
Oh, okay. The cat fell.
Yeah. Anyway, other game out this week.
He's scared.
Yeah. It's too much terror for Palico. The Iconoclasts game out this week. That's like a kind of 16-bit, like, looks kind of Metroidvania-ish. I saw like a brief snippet of Let's Play, but I did not dig in too deep. Laws of Machine looks like a kind of low-key, very, what's a nice way? It looks like it was made by one person.
Mm-hmm.
not in the best way, but I mean, I guess there's all sorts of stuff on the PlayStation Store these days. Lost Sphere.
Yeah, I really, really, really want this game to come together. I kind of dug I Am Setsuna.
And this fixes, so like this is Tokyo RPG Factory. It's the newest kind of Square Enix RPG studio. This is a follow-up to I Am Setsuna. That one is all snow. Like the environments kind of all look the same.
Yeah, I think I realized about 8 hours into I Am Setsuna that was the only setting in the game, and I got sad. Like I was just sort of like, oh, like I play video games to escape to like creative and bold and interesting new worlds, and this is just bleak. It was just like a sad, snowy, and there's like this drifting piano music. I literally fell asleep playing that game like 4 times.
But see, like this is actually I feel like it improves a lot of that, because you might like, if you're watching the video version, there's footage right now of you can move now during battle. Mm-hmm. Like it's a little more, they kind of, I don't think it's quite 100% there yet, but they're getting better at making it a little more of like a action-y thing.
Yeah.
And it's just a really cute, it feels very old school. Like it really does feel
very Chrono Trigger.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
I think that's their sort of root here.
Yeah, for sure. Like it does. It kind of goes back. It like there's a little bit of Final Fantasy X in there. There's a little bit of like kind of classic Square Enix stuff. And I think it's, it feels like a market improvement, what little I've played of it. I'm pretty excited to dive into it. I'm bummed because I Am Setsuna came to Vita only in Japan, mm-hmm. and then only came to eventually to Switch, but it only came to PS4 and PC here. This one, again, PS4, PC, and Switch. I would love these games on Vita. Like, I love my Switch, but like, I don't know. I want to give.
No.
It's nice to play a game like this on Vita, because that's actually where I played a bunch of I Am Setsuna. I played the Japanese version.
It bumps me out when games like this like don't get localized and don't come to America.
Yeah.
Especially like I saw the Secret of Mana collection thing, mm-hmm. like didn't come here or isn't coming here. I don't know. Like that sucks. I love those games and I'd love to try them again, especially on PS4. And
yeah, we got, they released, what was it? Adventures of Mana. Is it called Adventures of Mana? Whatever that unreleased one was, that came to Vita sometime last year.
Yeah.
We are getting the remaster,
the remake,
which
yeah.
I'm excited
yeah.
about. That'll be cool.
For
yeah,
sure.
I think we gave this one an okay review. I think review goes up this week. I'm still interested in trying it out because I'm like constantly itching for a sort of old school JRPG or RPG in general. Like I realize that like I really miss the sort of like leveling up and grinding in games.
Hey, what if you played Persona 5?
Don't. We went the whole okay. episode.
All right.
Do you want to play some Monster Hunter?
I'm afraid. Oh, both of you.
Don't you want to go kill an animal and bring its parts back to camp? Well, it's like, what are these?
Yes, it's called Bloodborne. I'm going to keep playing it because I love it. I can level up in that game. I can kill the horse skeleton. I don't have to go to high school.
You have to ask your friends how to level up.
My friends aren't there.
It is funny that you mentioned RPGs because this last game, OKKO Let's Play Heroes, is a Cappy RPG based on a Cartoon Network show that I played in PAX and totally fell in love with. I haven't even seen the show, but it's like in lockstep with the development of the show itself. Mm-hmm. And it is just this really cute, clever RPG that has all these like I feel like you especially would dig it. It has these really funny little systems, like one of the ways that you get like super moves or unlock new characters, you have like a binder of like trading cards, and there's just all these cute little like, you are very clearly a kid,
right?
It was super fun. I was actually really impressed by it.
I believe it was like an OKKO beat 'em up game that came out a couple months ago, and it was like totally fine, if not very sort of repetitive, but I didn't know any of the characters because I don't watch the show. So like any of the charm of that was gone on me. Like it's like if I had played the Ninja Turtles arcade game in the 90s and I was like, I've never seen the show. I don't know who these guys are.
Well, apparently,
it's been confusing.
Apparently like the guys who make the show they're gamers, like they're young enough that they grew up with it.
Rules.
And I think we're at a point where we're starting to see that with, we see this with Rick and Morty, where Justin Roiland is like hugely invested in making games.
Yeah.
I mean, to a sort of different extent, like the South Park guys actually giving a damn about making a good South Park game.
Yeah, for sure.
They did a good job.
Yeah.
Yeah, they did twice.
I would
yeah.
love it if we got like a proper Steven Universe game, because I actually keep track of that. But like,
well,
I think
especially
it's awesome.
This
also,
one,
it's Cappy
it's
games.
It's Cappy. That's what yeah. I was going to say. Those like the, they have proven that they're the guys, you know, like they're yeah. so good at this.
Also, once this is out, which it will be soon, they can go back to finishing Below, a
someday.
Game that isn't out yet. How long have we been talking about that game?
That was, I want to say 20. Was it 2013? Was it that long ago?
That was an Xbox One exclusive?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it probably helps to shoulder the cost of a game that's been in development for 8 years to sort of go like, hey, we'll do a licensed one in the middle.
Yeah. It might have been after that. It might have been a couple years later than that, but I think it's been almost that long at this
point. I completely forgot about that.
I've seen it like so many PAXes. We've seen it so many events.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's kind of cool seeing an indie studio jump on something licensed like this. The guys who did Nog actually helped make one of the, I think it was Deus Ex Go. And it's weird to be like, oh, it's like kind of like Taika Waititi directing Thor Ragnarok. You're
right.
Like, oh, you made like weird independent movies and now you're doing this AAA thing.
Or what was it? The Mummy that came out?
The Mummy Demastered that was done by WayForward.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, that's that happens sometimes. That'd be a cool roundup to see like a bunch of great studios working on stuff that you might not understand.
Well, I mean, and even we have Crystal Dynamics making an Avengers game right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, if it means like great licensed stuff, then sure, let's do it.
But I mean, even just smaller stuff, like if it's going to be licensed stuff and you've only got a set budget, like give it to an indie studio.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That makes a ton of sense. Now, Casey, this last game, you like Monster Hunter. What about Wild Turkey Hunter?
I think this is the game that Andrew was asking for.
Yeah, actually, I'm sorry. This is the one I'll be playing after DICE, just to clarify.
Yeah. So I don't know if this is a joke. This looks like something I would Photoshop. This looks like a terrible gag.
What? Is this actually coming out?
This is a real game. I'm not making this up.
It's
There's
coming
a game
out this week.
On PSN this week called Wild Turkey Hunter, and the blurb for it is this. Come experience interactive hunting at its best. As opposed to like that passive, you know, sit back and watch hunting that is called just animal. It's called bird watching. It's not hunting. All right. Enjoy matching wits with America's most elusive game bird, the wild turkey. I don't know if you guys have ever encountered wild turkeys, but
they will walk across your front lawn in packs of eight and stand there. So no, not elusive. Also, they'll literally drown if it rains. So
do you know how,
matching wits with them, not that hard.
Here's actually how you build a turkey trap. If you dig a hole in the ground that has a small ramp on one side of it and you put anything over it, and then you throw like grain or something down in the hole, the turkey will walk down the ramp and then it'll go, oh, it's nighttime. And it will stay in the hole. So if you're trapped in the woods, that's how you track down America's most elusive game bird, the wild turkey.
It's a weird font, too. It looks like, I don't know, like a 70s
like a
energy
paint.
Drink.
Yeah, it looks like a Photoshop I would do when I'm tired, not enthusiastic. Mm-hmm. Also, like, it's like this, the picture is great. It's just this, like, big full plumage turkey, and there's just a crosshairs on it. Like,
I'm sure someone worked very hard on this game. They're very proud of their... Yeah. Turkey hunting simulation.
Oh, I'm 100% buying this game. We're going to play it on Up at Noon this week, so tune in. But yeah, that was Beyond this week. Wild Turkey Hunter.
You can also hunt wild turkey down at the local bar, the old saloon.
Yeah,
pound a few of those shots.
Not that tasty.
Oh, it's really not.
You got to get the 110 proof. It really goes down.
It's a smooth one after
like
a nice
punch
divorce.
In the neck. Anyway, that was Beyond this week. Please head over to youtube.com/IGNBeyond and subscribe to that channel and check out some of the videos we got up. That's where we're putting all of our rapid fire, our sort of off topic questionnaires. We're doing occasional Let's Plays. Go over there and say hello. On that note, we are all on Twitter. You can find me there. I'm Max Scoville. Brian is Agent Bizzle. Andrew is Garfep. Casey, what are you?
I'm Shiny KCD.
Shiny KCD. Like the Pokemon?
Yeah, like Shiny Pokemon.
What is that? This is a PlayStation show, madam. Please, how dare you wear that
shirt?
Sorry.
I didn't know I was going to be here today.
And if you're going to be grabbing Monster Hunter World, you've got the guide up on IGN?
Yes, it will be up on IGN Wiki. So if you just type in IGN Monster Hunter World Wiki, that will be that guide.
And including the 1,700 words on the Great Sword?
Yes, on the Long Sword.
Long Sword.
Short story, perfect. Long Sword. All right, that's Beyond. Thank you all for watching or listening or whatever, and may you have a wonderful week of the games. Goodbye.
See you soon.
Bye.
So long.
Cowabunga.
You don't
Beyond.
Okay. Happy hunting.
Here's a quick question for you. How did you sleep last night? If your battle for a good night's sleep feels relentless, I have the answer. It's a podcast called Sleepwave, with meditations and hypnosis created to help you fall asleep. My relaxation techniques will help you feel calm and ready for sleep with soft music that will help you fall asleep in minutes. Most listeners never hear the end of an episode. So search Sleepwave on your favorite podcast app and find out why over 1 million people have fallen asleep to my voice.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am extremely excited to invite you to Rachel Uncensored. It's my podcast where I sit down and get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. And sometimes we might be under the influence when we do so. We cover things from personal stories to hot button issues. And it's the only place on the internet you can find an uncensored version of me. It's a side of me that you might not have seen before because it's not the most family or brand friendly. But don't worry, I'm still sort of slightly a decent human being. If you're intrigued, then make sure you check it out. New episodes drop every Wednesday. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.